Blog Talk Radio.
From Los Angeles, I'm Frank Thomas on the Creating Calm Network on Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to the Hour of Truth with Coach FT. I'm your host. I'm a man of God who is disguised as a coach, consultant, speaker, and author of the forthcoming book, Rise, Even Death Can't Stop Me. This is my debut book about overcoming a childhood marred by parental addictions, abandonment, adversity, and bad choices, and how I turned everything that could have been a reason to quit into a reason to succeed. Thank you for tuning in. Whether you're listening live, replay, or podcast, I'm honored that you would take part of your day to allow me the opportunity to speak into your life. That's a privilege as far as I'm concerned, and one that I do not take very lightly. Honor of Truth with Coach FT is about sharing the truths of life through my experiences, the experiences of my guests, and the experiences of you, the listeners. I can't think of a better way to invite people into a conversation than through the telling of stories, stories that change people, stories that transform lives. We always appreciate questions and comments that are insightful and encouraging to our listeners. So if you have a question or comment, I encourage you to share. Our lines are open, and our call-in number is area code 619-393-2918. One of the greatest benefits of doing this show is the ability to bring in guests who are simply amazing people with absolutely amazing stories. Today's show is titled, Your Healing is in Your Pain. We'll be talking about how pain is oftentimes the catalyst for your healing. My guest today is a man with an amazing story of overcoming. William Craig is a gifted creative writer and an inspirational poet. He was shot in the head, the victim of a drive-by shooting in 1991 that left him blind in one eye, paralyzed, and bound to a wheelchair. However, William has not allowed the traumatic injury to stop him from reaching his purposeful destination. Overcoming challenges of being limited, he has defied doctors and his critics by learning other languages, having a beautiful daughter, and a movement that was restored to his right left leg and vision to his left eye. Using a memory strategy he developed using poetry and lyrics, it enabled him to take advantage of all three memory vehicles, sight, speaking, and hearing. He's used this technique to learn Spanish by translating his poetry, songs, and singing to himself and others. He gives all the credit for his miraculous recovery to his Lord and Savior. William, welcome to the Hour of Truth with Coach FT. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Coach.
Well, I'm just glad to have you here. You're a dear friend of mine, a brother, and I just thank you for taking the time to show up today and share your experiences, you know, with the hope of dropping seeds in people's hearts and hopefully giving them an opportunity to see that pain sometimes is the catalyst for the healing that we have. William, your story is powerful and remarkably inspirational. Can you give the listeners some background on your story?
Well, Coach Frank, I'm in this wheelchair as a result, as you said, of being shot in the head. After I was honorably discharged from the Armed Forces of the United States, I had bought my first house. My son was only a year and a half old. I started a repo service, just to let you know, as a finance manager, and I started a repo service for a chain of car dealerships in Santa Monica and in Valencia I was working with mainly. And while out late looking for a car, I inadvertently drove through a gang fight. That's actually what happened. When a person's car is getting repossessed and they know it, they normally park their car in a 5 to 6 block radius of their home to try to hide it and walk home. So my partner and I were just circling and casing the area, and I heard something go pow, pow. And I thought it was just a car backfiring or something like that, okay? And next thing I know, I have a car chasing me, shooting at me. I'll never forget, I looked in the rearview mirror, and it was these arms. I saw the long end of what looked like a station wagon with all these arms and guns hanging out, firing at it. It was like a movie, man. They were lighting up the sky. Bullets were hitting the windows. I told my wife, I said, dive under the dashboard. He credits me with saving his life, but I credit him with saving my life. But in a process, rather, of getting away, bullets were like a ring in the car, breaking windows, everything. I flipped around backwards, he said. He looked up and we were driving backwards. I must have been leaned over the steering wheel or something. He said it just looked like a bullet must have come through the front window and hit you in the top of your head because you went flying back in the seat and blood went everywhere. Then we wrecked into somebody's car in a driveway. He said he just jumped out and went and kicked the door in and grabbed someone's phone and called 911. Fortunately, I was in Linwood, and I was by St. Francis Hospital. They got me to the hospital where they were able to resuscitate me after 6 minutes the first time. The process of surgery is what really got me, because what they do is they cut your scalp off, and then they do whatever they're going to do in the brain, remove debris or things like that, but they had to leave the bullet there because it's in my sinus cavity, and they said it's in the safest place it could be in my head, surrounded by cartilage. But when they put the skull back on, they staple it with these, like, industrial-style staples until your bone mends back together, and then you go in to get the staples out. But what happened was, while the bone was mending together, this is how miraculous God is, a blood clot had developed on my lungs, okay? And at the time the bone completed healing, they were taking me to the operating room to get the staples pulled out of my head. But while I'm under surgery, the blood clot breaks off from my lungs and goes to my heart and causes what's called a myocardial pulmonary contusion, which in essence is a cardiac arrest or a stroke, where I went flatline for 11 minutes. Had I been in that hospital room alone, there wouldn't have been medical personnel around me to resuscitate me after 11 minutes. But God knew exactly when I needed to be surrounded by medical personnel, so the bone mended at the time that the clot was breaking off. And I went in, and fortunately, I was surrounded by medical personnel. I went flatline. I died, literally, for 11 minutes, and I had the most amazing experience. But I didn't see the white light and all that, like people say. I just had a feeling of floating out of my body, and I was going up, up, up. But I was experiencing the most excruciatingly painful cold you could possibly imagine. I felt like my eyeballs were going to explode and my head was going to blow up. That's how painful it was. And I was like, when is this going to end? And I was just going up, up, up. An excruciating pain, and then all of a sudden I landed somewhere. I really literally felt my feet go boom, boom, and I landed somewhere, and then I felt these arms just embrace me, and I warmed up the most incredible, comforting warmth you could possibly imagine, and it was just a relief of, ah, and bling, I opened my eyes, and I'm flat on my back in this operating room with all these doctors and medical personnel. Welcome back, sir. Welcome back. You've been gone a while. Welcome back, and that's what happened then. When I came back,
wow!
I mean, it was just an amazing thing, and I always, Go ahead. I'm listening.
Let me ask you this. I mean, a miracle, obviously, for some to be dead 11 minutes and to be brought back to life. I can't explain that any other way than a miracle. Tell me how that changed your life. I mean, obviously you. You're told this story that you've been gone for 11 minutes at some point in time in the future when you've begin to become to and able to comprehend kind of the experience that you've been through. Talk about how that changed you.
Well, that it had a miraculous metamorphosis for my life. I'm going to tell you that. I am a completely different man because of the challenges I've had to overcome. It's been kind of like, I'll just give you a description because you know I'm a writer. It's been kind of like God told me, he said, William, if the coal only knew what would occur at the end of his trial beneath the earth, that the heat, fire, and pressure that tested his life would change his value so his price would be right, he'd have a whole lot of joy. So God showed me how what the devil used for a weapon to destroy me, he was just going to transform into a tool to shape me into who he's called me to be. Both processes are uncomfortable, I'm going to tell you, being shaped and being assaulted by the enemy. Okay, I'm going to tell you that. But what it's done for me is given me a different perspective on life. I'm going to tell you that right now. I realize that I'm not even going through this for me. I'm not going through this for me. I'm learning a lot, and at the end of this trial, I'll be a completely different person, but it'll help me to help others when they see someone who hasn't thrown in the towel, but he kept it to wipe his brother's brow in spite of any challenges. It'll inspire other people to remove the quit option, because I truly believe the abandonment that I faced when my wife left me for my accountant when I was in the hospital, the fact that my children have never been able to see me walk, friends and family, just a lot of them just deserted. I was the one in the family who really carried the ball financially. I was making good money and people could depend on me with that kind of stuff. But it seems that I bought my relationships, because when the money was gone, the relationships were gone, it seems. And then it came to me that you don't really lose a friend. You only find that you may have never had one.
Wow. Wow.
So that's given me a different concept on relationships and everything. But I'd like to share something with you that God gave me, because it's just kind of like one of my mantras. It's called perspective, and it's from looking up at, from this position of a wheelchair. I have to look. It's a very humbling position. And God showed me, he said, William, I told you guys to humble yourselves. I made a suggestion, but if you don't humble yourself like my son did when he stepped off the throne to come down and lay his life down for you guys when you abused him and tortured him, then I'm going to have to allow circumstances to humble you. So I've definitely been humbled. I'm seated in a wheelchair, and this is what came to me, and it's called perspective. It's about my view. And here it goes. It goes like this. Something dove is frail and weak. Tell me, please, how can this be? When the tallest tree is no match for me, and the sky is never out of reach. I rise each day with my friend to sing. His name is the sun, and he covers me. Though I fly through the sky, I live on the earth. In a meager nest designed for the birth of those once trapped in shells like me, now soar through the heavens high and free. Can you just try to see it from my perspective? You might just have another point of view.
Wow. Wow, that's powerful.
I want to tell you, it's giving me a different point of view.
The humbling, you know, experiences that come into our lives that give us perspective. As you can think about the perspective, the new perspective that you have, do you think without that new perspective or the accident that occurred that you would be where you are today?
I had, no, you know what, Coach Frank, I'm going to tell you. My wife left me, as I said. She went from a man who just bought his first house, where she didn't have to work. We had a child. She had all her needs met, to a man who she had to help go to the bathroom and wipe his behind, feed him, dress him, bathe him, and everything. I probably would have left myself, but I couldn't walk. So I can't really blame her. She didn't bargain for this. But I know one thing, that what it's done for me is given me the desire to defy critics and let them know that standing or sitting, I'm not quitting. I don't look for rationales now to not be able to do something. I look for means and ways to get things accomplished. And God has given me the creative ability, the favor, and the wisdom, everything needed to not just survive in this situation, but overcome. And he told me something, Coach Frank. This is what he told me. He said, William, you're an overcomer. And that is just, overcomer is just overcome, initialed by the righteous with an R. And I would be a liar if I allowed you to go to a challenge that you weren't able to overcome, because I've created you to be more than a conqueror. And he said, my son was hanging on the cross with nails in his hands and in his feet, witnessing to criminals. And he said, you know what, not only was he witnessing to those criminals in excruciating pain, but the people who were close enough to him to rip his clothes off and stab him in the side, they heard what was going on. And he was witnessing to them, too. They were asking him questions. He was ministering in the midst of excruciating pain and ministering to the exact people who were trying to destroy him. He was trying to give them new life. And it's just an amazing thing to have relieved all rationale for me about not being all I've been called to be, no matter how much pain I'm going through, no matter what type of disability I have. I have no excuse, and I'm not looking for excuses. So what it's done has inspired me to rise to the call. And I want to encourage any of your listeners that anything that they're going through, I know being in a wheelchair and getting shot in the head seems to be very traumatic, and it is. For me, it is. But God's given me the ability to overcome in this circumstance. And if someone's going through something that's traumatic to them, that's just as traumatic to them as this is to me. So all I'm going to do is encourage you to not throw in the towel, because the towel is not yours. It's to wipe your brother's brow. God gave it to you. God has your towel. He dabs your brow.
Yes.
But when you get to the end of your finish line, he wants you to have your towel in your hand to have some compassion and dab your brother's brow. So don't throw in the towel no matter what, and your trophy is going to be the broken tape at the end of your race. But I'm going to let you know, along your course, God is going to have people lined up along your course to give you Gatorade, but it's living water Gatorade. It's living water. Like Coach Frank, he gives living water to me and others. And he's along your course. Your race is for you, but you're going to be refreshed if you don't throw in the towel and you go to the finish line.
So let's talk about our topic. Your healing is in your pain. I've had discussions with you in the past and other people as well about pain and how it can lead to healing and how you have a physical and visible disability being in a wheelchair. I would contend that we all have disabilities. Most people just aren't visible. And because they're not visible, we do our best to try to hide them so that they're not exposed. Has there ever been a time where you tried to hide your visible disability, and how did it circumvent the healing process if you did?
Well, how I tried to hide my disability, you mean being in the wheelchair?
Yeah, even though you're in a wheelchair, we all have disabilities, and we can try to hide from it. So is there any way that you tried to hide, even though it was still visible, you can still try to hide?
Yes. I tried to hide behind the veil of denial in a lot of instances. Denial, where I was not able to walk in the truth about myself or other people. And sometimes we have a tendency to deny what we know is true. So we don't have to accept the responsibility of doing what's right. So I did that in a lot of instances. I denied the truth about what I was going on with me, so I wouldn't have to deal with the responsibility. And it was a wheelchair. Denial was a wheelchair for me. Another thing that was a wheelchair for me, I'm just going to tell you, is lying, which was birthed by fear. Lying is birthed by fear. And it's the fear of dealing with the consequences of wrong choices we've made. And until I was able to walk in my responsibility and handling the consequences of my wrong choices, I would lie about things to get out of it. Or not even that, just lie about who I was and what I've accomplished for man-pleasing, because I wasn't confident about who God had created me to be. And I had a tendency to say, you know what, this is who I know, this is what I've done, and this is what I can be. And a lot of times it was painting the bigger picture of who I was, but it was because I was afraid of rejection and that people wouldn't accept me because I wasn't all that I thought I should be for them. But it's not about who I need to be for them, it's about who I need to be for God. And as long as I'm accepted by Him, I shouldn't worry about a thing. I should be confident with who He created me to be. Standing in a wheelchair on my feet. So those are some of my wheelchairs because of the fear I was dealing with. But one of the ones that I'm still overcoming in a lot of arenas, and it's a lot of us, the one that a lot of us deal with, and that is pride, which births rebellion, I'm going to tell you. What that does, Coach Frank, is that causes you to be unwilling to walk in submission to authorities, whether it's your boss, whether it's a leader at a church, or where it causes you to be unwilling. Pride causes rebellion. And if you're unwilling to humbly submit and walk under somebody, then you're very rebellious. And it came to me that we have to be willing to understand who's leading us. And the way you understand is you have to have some humility, okay? And because you have to understand is a compound word. You have to understand someone, not overstand someone in order for them to pour into you. Because when you're prideful, it's kind of like Lucifer. He was so prideful, he rebelled, and he got evicted from heaven. Rebellion could get you evicted from a job and evicted from a wealth of other arenas that could really bless you. So we have to learn to humble ourselves, and that's what humility has done for me. So those are some of the rules that people have to
learn. You made quite a few very good points, you know, stepping back to denial and not walking in truth. You know, obviously as this, This show is titled Hour of Truth. Truth is so important. I've once heard that the worst deception is self-deception, because you can lie to everyone on the outside, but you can't lie to yourself. And the lies only keep you from being in the place properly positioned for your destiny. But living in lies takes you away from the truth, which takes you away from your proper position and destiny. And so I think that's a great point. One of the things that I really try to instill in this show is that truth is the only thing that matters. It's the only thing that's going to free you. It's the only thing that's going to deliver you to the destiny that you've called to. So I think that you're spot on with denial and not walking in the truth. Let me ask you this. The topic of this show is your healing is in your pain. How is the pain of going through that life-changing trauma? How has it been the source of your healing? Have you felt like it's been the reason that you've been able to get beyond maybe some of the things that you were able to hide before you were in a wheelchair, before you were paralyzed? And now that you've been forced to really, you know, go through that pain, that you've come to a place of healing?
Well, I'm going to tell you what it's really done for me is it just goes back to truth, like what you're saying. My acronym for truth is taking righteous understanding to heart. Okay, now what it's done for me, I had to deal with the truth about myself. And I have a lot of things I had and still have a lot of things wrong that need to be corrected. And the only one who could correct those or help me with and who wouldn't abandon me was God. So what it's done for me, what it did and what it does for me still constantly, is causes me to reach for the only source and to depend on the only source that can get me out of a wheelchair, that can do anything else that I need, that's God. It's caused me to be more dependent on a supernatural Father who loves me and who will never abandon me. He's the only one who hasn't abandoned me going through this whole thing. And he told me, he said, the reason why, William, is because I am love. And love sets boundaries, it instructs and corrects, but it never abandons and it always protects. He said, I'm going to always be there protecting you and I'll never abandon you. But while you're around me, it's about improving and growth. So you got to be willing to be corrected and take the correction and do something to change so you're not making the same mistakes all the time. So what it did for me, because I'm going to tell you something, Coach Frank, I realized that anything that is valuable is birthed through pain, whether it's a child or whether it's a breakthrough in our lives. There's pain with birthing something new. So in order to birth something new in me, I went through some pain, okay? The pain of I had to let people go, I had to let things go, and that kind of hurt. It's like a yoke. You know what a yoke is, right? It's where it's almost a chain around your neck that links you up to somebody else. And sometimes when those yokes are destroyed, it's painful. If you break your connection with somebody who you thought was a resource for you, or who you thought loved you or whatever, but it's a painful thing. So I had to break some yokes, and it was painful because the yoke was on my neck. And when it was destroyed, I was attached to it. And I lost a lot of things, but praise God, I gained a lot of things because after the yoke was broken, though it was painful, he came and lifted some burdens of low self-esteem and everything else. And it was such a gracious, gentle way. So the burden relief made up for the pain, and it kind of relieved the pain of the yoke being broken.
I think that's great. I mean, I think that's awesome. I think the vast majority of us, I think it's natural for us to want to not feel pain. Our bodies don't want to feel pain. We don't want to go through processes that are refining us because they hurt. But like we know, diamonds are formed under the most intense heat and pressure. Gold is impurity. Gold is burned off at the most intense heat, and it makes them jewels. And so it's almost counterintuitive in a sense, because when we try to distance ourselves from the pain, we distance ourselves from the growth, from the destiny, and the beauty of yeah, the beauty of that is just when we learn to say, look, I know it's not pleasure to endure through difficulties. I know it's not fun. For instance, if you're a college student and you have to pull an all-nighter in order to study and prepare for an examination that you have the following day. But the beauty of it is that there's growth that takes place. Your character is being refined. You're just learning in that process. And so
you
talk about the pain, that pains, you know, the pains of birth, you know, all these other pains. Pain can be something that is a beautiful thing because it leads to healing. Not only that, pain is very important in our lives because sometimes it's through the pain that we understand that things are wrong.
Amen. I agree 100%. The birth thing for me was allowing this inner man to come to the surface in my character, in my thoughts, in my actions. Because I realized that this exterior man is not the man who I really am. I was deceived for years. Who I really am is on the inside, and he was longing to come out. And it took some painful circumstances to bring him out. When a lot of us don't have to go through some things, we could just purpose to let our inner man radiate and shine through us. We can purpose it for without. We can make a choice to do it and just do what's necessary to bring, to breathe that and to bring that forth. We can make a choice to do it.
I'm going to go to the to calls. Callers, if you have a question, the call-in number is area code 619-393-2918. I'm going to go to the phones with a question. Caller, you're on. Are you there? Okay, guess not. Anyway.
Frank, are you there?
Yes.
Hello?
Can you hear me?
Hi, this is Ginger. Yes, I can. Can you hear me?
I hear you fine. Thank you for
your
call.
Hello, Frank. Thank you. Hello, William. How are you?
Hi. I like to tell people on the inside I'm standing up so tall I might have to start shopping at the Lunar Mall.
Well, I have a question for you. My background is in social psychology, and I used to work at a psychiatric hospital working with adjudicated gang members. And we had a young man who was 15 who was involved in a gang. His father passed away from AIDS. His mother was dying, and he took care of his four-year-old sibling. One day as he was walking out, he bent over to pick up his sibling, and he, too, experienced a drive-by. Unfortunately, his sibling died. What truth and what love would you share with that man today who is under pressure?
What I would tell him is to forgive himself, first of all. And if it was a child, because it was a child, that child is in a better place than he can possibly imagine. And don't let the tragic circumstances that occurred enslave him to not loving and forgiving himself, because he didn't do it purposely. It was an accident. So he has to love himself so he can be of value to someone else. And that child is in a position now where he's basking in eternity with the love of God, and he's going to be waiting on this man should he accept the Lord and decide to live in eternity.
Thank
wow.
you so much.
Thank you for the call. I tell you, that's powerful. The truth is that we all make mistakes. We're all products of our environment. Yes, we have choices and decisions that we must make, but we're all formed based on the knowledge that we take in and the information that we take in and the people who are role models around us. And, you know, I heard something today, and it was just so poignant. It was one of our pastors mentioned something at church, and she said that your mistakes do not disqualify you. Because let's face it, we all make mistakes. And just because you make a mistake or you fail miserably at something, or you do something that is that you just feel is unforgivable, like you can't even feel like you can forgive yourself, the reality is life's not over. You still got to be here. And which brings me to the point, William, you're on some level you had to recognize that your life wasn't over. Talk about that process and what you thought in that. What did you see your destiny being?
Well, it came to me that the opposite of love is not hate, but selfishness, because love seeks to give and help others, and selfishness just desires to hoard for self. And my God is simply love. 1 John 4:8, he says, I am love. And what he did, Coach Frank, because he's love, is he put a gift in every single thing he created to give away to exemplify his character. Bees, honey, trees, fruit, clouds, rain, sun, light, warmth, vitamin D, solar energy, you name it. Even flowers have to give fragrance. You and I are the only creatures that aren't required to give our gift away, and it's only because we're made in God's image, and we can't force God to do a thing. He does everything for us simply because he loves us, and he wants you and I to be motivated by the same characteristic of our spirit, love, to just see a need and meet it out of love. And then he gave me something for love. He said, love, the acronym is letting ourselves value everyone. And then he told me this. He said, William, the reflex of fear is flight or fight. It's a repellent. And he told me the reflex of love is help. It's an adherent. And then he said, help is when you humbly employ love's power. So what he did is he showed me what my gift was, and he told me that was a gift that he equipped me with, the fruit that I was supposed to use to feed people. And then once I understood what I had to offer, I had no rationale for not giving it away and bless the lives of others. So now what happened was, I understood a purpose that God had for me was to encourage and build up and lift up. And I love to do it. I think he did it so that he gave me something that I love to do, because he knew I'd do it all the time because it felt good to do it. And then he showed me something, Coach Frank, and it was simply this, that I'm not like a Christmas tree that when all the gifts are gone from under the tree, they're ready to toss you into the trash can because the season's over. I'm like a fruit tree. You and I are like fruit trees that when the right person tastes up and is nurtured by the gift of fruit God's given us to offer, they're going to look for orchards to plant us in and duplicate us, and that's how he gets territory for his kingdom. So I just have a joy just encouraging people and sharing my poetry and inspiring people. It's just the most rewarding thing for me. So when I found out what my purpose was, that encouraged me that I can do all things, because what it did is that, see, love is an adherent and fear is a repellent. So what I do with the love, giving this gift in love, it draws people into me and me into others. And I think that's how we connected, Coach Frank, with the gift I was giving away.
Yeah.
And God gave me three ways to determine what your main gift is. We have more than one. We have like a big wheel under our Christmas tree, and then we have some other residual gifts. Like my main gift is encouragement. And the writing and things and poetry just gets people opened up to be encouraged, like your listeners are right now. And he told me the three steps to determine what your main gift is this. One, simply ask him in Colossians 1:3, rather, it says, pray for a knowledge of his will and all wisdom and purpose and all wisdom and spiritual understanding. But this is what he showed me. He said, William, you didn't ask to come to planet Earth. I knew you and shaped you and formed you before I placed you in your mother's womb to transport you there. And I equipped you with the things I needed to get done, you have for me to get done on planet Earth. What I sent you down there for was for me, not for you. I sent you down there for me. I equipped you with what you needed to do, what needed to be done for me. So now that you're down there, don't think that you're not going to have the resources to do what I've called you to do. He told me this. He said, it's like you work for McDonald's, for example. They send you to Nevada to open up a McDonald's in Las Vegas. They fly you there, you land there, and then you call corporate and you say, listen, I'm here and I found a place to build a McDonald's, the people to hire and everything, all the other resources we need to do this thing, but I'm going to need the money and finances from you to get this thing done. And then the corporation tells you you're going to have to come up with it yourself. You're going to say, forget you and go back home. I came here for you. And God didn't do that to us. So he sent us here to accomplish something, and he gave us all the resources, the people resources we need, the gifting resources we need, the wisdom we need, and most of all, the right standing that we need with him because of the blood of Jesus. He gave us everything we needed. So people who don't think they have what it takes, they are being deceived. All they have to do is ask. So what you have to do is, one, ask, why did you purpose, what purpose did you send me here for? You ask him. The second thing is simply this. God uses the people closest to you in your life to confirm the gift he put in you. Like when we're growing up, friends, family, relatives, teachers would say things like, William, you're so good at this. You're probably going to do blah, blah, blah. William, isn't William good at this? He's probably going to be a blah, blah. That's one of the ways. People have confirmed it in your life before. And the other, the last thing is what you get the most fulfillment from doing. God did it as a trigger, so we give it away as much as possible and catch the attention of the world.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk about your gift of poetry. You recited this poem called Arise, and I would love for you to share that with our listeners.
Okay, I would love to do it too. It's my theme. It comes from what I call a poetility profile, and I just do like a brief poetic synopsis of major events, occurrences, accomplishments, tragedies, or whatever that have occurred in a person's life, and I put a brief poetic synopsis in place. So mine is called Arise, and it goes like this. I remember when I could run, walk, dance, leap, take a shower while on my feet, after dinner with the wife, go up to bed, strum the guitar before resting my head. My life all changed on that awkward day when my legs and arm would not obey. I awakened from a short-lived death. Doctors thought it was my last breath. To their surprise, God opened my eyes. I remember when fear engulfed me, when I realized how life could now be. Unable to walk my son by the hand, to model outwardly how to stand, I had to show him a strength within, the kind that real men must stand in. I vowed to rise again one day, and in my heart, God made a way. That day has come to rise and shine. I may not walk, but I touch the sky. On the inside, I stand so tall. One day, this body's got to answer God's call to arise.
I love that. I love it. I love it. To me, it shows healing, a healing taking place, because I don't believe that people can find those words in their soul until they're willing to embrace the process of healing, and that healing is embracing the pain. But let me hit on one aspect of healing that I feel is so important in order to go the distance, to get the victory in that healing process. Forgiveness. Someone was behind a gun who pulled a trigger and caused this traumatic event in your life. Talk about where you are in that process of forgiving that person. Do you still hold on to any? Yeah, I'd like to hear, and I'm sure the listeners would love to hear that as well.
Are you kidding? I had so much unforgiveness. I lost my wife, my house, my kids have never seen me walk, my business, all because of somebody's lascivious act. But I'm going to tell you, I couldn't live with unforgiveness because it was too heavy for me. I couldn't carry the burden of that unforgiveness because there's nothing I could do, because what am I going to do to hurt that person or get back at them? All I'm going to do is suffer with the frustration of not being able to be vindictive. And God told me I was doing more damage to me than the thoughts of unforgiveness I was having for those people. It was just creating anxiety in me. So I just had to release it. And he gave me this wonderful scripture. It was in Proverbs. And it says, the wicked sins themselves. He said, William, what I would do if I were you is I would pray for those girls who shot you, because if they don't get out of that gang, then They only have two options. One is death and the other is prison. And if I were you, I'd begin to pray for those young people so they don't do that to somebody else. So I began to pray for these gangbangers. And I was, you know what happened? It was the most amazing thing. So that's how I know it's God. What happened was, I learned to forgive because I couldn't. I had the desire to forgive came immediately, but the ability and to actually walk in forgiveness was an everyday thing for me for quite some time. Because when the thought came up, I still had those angry, vindictive thoughts. I had to take thoughts captive and replace them. And how I did is with praying for them, saying, God, please don't let them harm another person like they've harmed me, and show them their value and show them how they can do something a lot more beneficial to the community than just kill people, and that they don't have to prove themselves to their peers. Let's show them how that all they have to do is know that you love them and accept them, and that's all that needs to occur. But help them to forgive themselves for all the wrong they're doing so that they can love others more. But what happened was, Coach Frank, as I was invited to go share my testimony at a church, this was the most amazing thing. And after I've done it, I had a wonderful response. I went out to eat with a gentleman from who was at the church, and we're sitting there, and I'm getting into more detail about my testimony and some other things I've overcome. And there was a lady that was sitting right near the table who was overhearing the conversation. You overheard the conversation? After we were done, she came and walked over to the table, and she said, "Sir, I couldn't help but overhear your conversation. I want to introduce myself to you. My name is Chaplain Linda Howe, and I'm the head chaplain of all L.A. County Correctional Facilities for the youth. And I couldn't help but believe that your story would really do some good and encourage the youth that I'm over, if you wouldn't mind coming out and speaking." So a few years back, I went out and spoke at Camp Scudder and Camp Scott in Saugus, California, the boys' camp and the girls' camp. And I had an amazing, well, God had, I'm going to say, an amazing impact on these youth. I did this thing. I did my poetry, but I did something that just really grasped their attention. It's called prophecy. I don't know if we have time, but I could share it with you, and I'll show you what happened.
Sure. Quickly.
Okay, it's called prophecy, and I call it prophecy because I woke up one night prior to getting shot, and I play guitar when this hand is working, and I went downstairs to just strum the guitar and kind of relax. And as I was strumming the guitar, sitting on this couch in front of this big window that was in our place, this just dropped in my heart. It goes like this. Once upon a time in another land, young, strong black men outnumbered the sand. Kings, princes, mighty were they. But now we're looking at another day. Brothers to the curb, gangs running wild. Young black girl with a dope-haired child. Misunderstanding, respect you're demanding. You put on your colors and you go a gangbanging. To prove you're a man, you shoot another brother. Please, God, please stop killing each other. Blood on the streets, police everywhere. Sound of a gat rings through the air. Little boy dying from a shot in the head. Father cries out, take me instead. In the hospital halls, hear the voice of his mother screaming, please, God, please stop killing each other. But
wow.
After that experience, 70 of the young people came to the Lord. And, 70 of the young people. God had an amazing impact. And he told me, William, you don't know if one of those girls in there were one of the ones who shot you.
They were?
He said, you don't know if one of those girls in there were one of the ones who shot you. And she could have gotten saved because you were praying for her.
Okay, I get it. I understand. Yeah, absolutely. Wow.
But that's what came to me. But I'm going to tell you, you can't go overcome any challenge or have any breakthrough without others helping you. I'm going to tell you, you can't do it alone.
No one does anything on their own. Let me ask you this. Did you have the gift of poetry prior to your accident? Was it something that you dabbled in or that you knew you had a gift for? Or is that something that you just came to you and you nurtured it after the fact?
Well, I always had it. I just loved music. I taught myself the guitar. And I wasn't writing like this. That one thing, prophecy, that I just did, I just woke up one night and did it. I didn't sit and toil over. I just sat there and he just dropped that in me. And it's a prophetic word because I got shot a year and a half after I did that.
Wow.
In the head.
Wow.
But no, I wasn't as proficient or anything in this. I was not doing what I'm doing now. I mean, it amazes me some of the stuff he deposits in my heart, but it's therapy for me. I mean, it's therapeutic. He's had to give me something called Merry Heart medication to get me through this trial because I used to be on a lot of drugs. I used to have grand mal seizures. I'm healed of those. I couldn't be out alone, I couldn't be doing something like this out on the phone alone or whatever. And but he gave me the remedy for seizures, and I'm healed of seizures, so I can care for myself. I can be out in the community. I can do whatever. But he's given me Merry Heart medication, and he just helps me to look at things from an optimistic point of view. And he gave me this wonderful acronym for HOPE, and it's having optimistic, purposeful expectation. So it's a challenge to find the beauty in everything, but he's given me the ability to do that, that everything that he's created has value. And you got to look beyond the surface and be a beauty miner. And then you got to not worry. He told me, he said, William, worry, because I was challenged financially, everything. I lost my business and everything. And he told me that, William, worry is simply a person's choice to imagine the worst possible results when they don't know what's going to happen. He said, why don't you imagine the best? And then he gave me this. I love it. He said, when worry fills your imagination, there's no longer space to birth my creation. Imagine the best in spite of what you see, because what you believe is what you'll receive. So it just changed my concept about what I was meditating on. And in doing so, it inspired me with more optimistic points of views on everything. And then he started just depositing things in me about who
wow.
I am. And my insecurity was eradicated, everything. I was very insecure about being in this wheelchair.
That's just so powerful and so poignant. For the listeners, one of the things that I heard was, like light and darkness, they can't coexist. Just like love and hate can't. You choose one. You choose one. You can't have both. They just can't coexist together.
You're absolutely right. And I'm going to tell you something. Just to comment on that.
Our
it's
choice. Go ahead.
It's our choice.
Mm-hmm.
Our choice. And it's a responsibility that we all have. And this is the thing. God said that life and death are in the power of our tongue. Our tongue is like a weapon in, to some degree. So what I've learned not to do is commit with something that I call wordicide or word degree murder by speaking death over myself or others. I call it wordicide when you speak death over yourself and word degree murder when you're speaking death over someone else. So I have learned not to sabotage my future with my words.
Well, I tell you that people, I think we know that intellectually, but I don't think it really touches the heart of people enough to understand. And I've said this time and time again. Look, we have to be careful what we tell ourselves because, let's face it, if people talk to us like we talk to ourselves, we'd probably get into fights every single day. We have to build ourselves up. We have to encourage ourselves. I mean, it starts with ourselves. We have to, when we look in the mirror, we have to see the beauty of who we are.
Amen.
Not our flaws, because, you know, everyone, God said that we're fearfully and wonderfully made. He didn't say that, you know, on Tuesday you are, or when you put your makeup on you are. He said you're fearfully and wonderfully made.
Thank you.
And that is, we have life. Everyone who has ears to hear this and a heart to receive it has life. They've been created, which implies, which what's inherent in creation is purpose. We're all placed here for purpose. And we have a choice on really, are we going to live out our truest purpose, or are we going to wander? And wandering the earth causes frustration because we question, what in the world am I doing here?
Oh, my goodness. I've questioned that. I've questioned myself with that on so many occasions. I was so happy to come to the understanding of why God, what God equipped me with and why he put me here. And it's everybody's mandate. We're here for others. He sent us here for others to represent the kingdom of heaven. And I'm just going to tell you, man, until you walk in purpose like that. And just to digress, though, Coach Frank, with reference to value, we have to renew our minds and know we're not the exterior person. Our value is on the inside. And everything in the visible starts in the invisible. He told me something about me being with this paralysis on my left. He said, William, he said, if you had a beautiful Mercedes, it just had a damaged left door that couldn't open well and it was parked in your backyard, and you couldn't open the door well, but the rest of the car looked great and it ran great, he said, would you not use that car to get somewhere very important or get someone you know or love somewhere very important? I said, of course I would, God. He said, well, that's how I want you to look at that body. You have a very important passenger in there. It's just your left door doesn't open that well right now. And you've got a very valuable passenger to get around on planet Earth to get some things done. And that you, the real you, is really all that's important and it's required to get what I need done. So just make sure you don't neglect getting that man around because of a broken left door or whatever may be broken on your exterior.
Isn't it funny how we look at the brokenness and not the 99% that's just wonderful? We see the pimple as opposed to the beauty of our hearts and who we are.
Yes. And it's the nature of man to look at the worst, to look at the macabre, to be intrigued with news about somebody getting their head chopped off rather than somebody rescuing somebody in the middle of a street whose wheelchair broke out and cars were headed at him, like what happened with me recently.
Well, there's still good people out there.
There are. And I think, Coach Frank, you're one of those people, and you're helping multitudes with what you're doing now. And I just want to commend you for having a heart for others. You're operating in the acronym for love, letting ourselves value everyone. And you're letting yourself value others. So
well,
thank
I appreciate
you for being
that.
One of those people.
Well, thank you. I appreciate you acknowledging that. And it does. It comes from my heart. I just desire to play my part. And I'm like you, William. I'm an encourager. And I just desire to see people smile. I love it when people can just, if the light goes on, they can begin to see that they have been created for a greater purpose and they've got a destiny in front of them and that they're not going to choose fear anymore. They're going to choose faith. They're not going to play small in life anymore. They're going to let their light shine and they're going to shine their light and allow people to see their own light. I think
Amen. When
we do that, it just increases us. The more we give of ourselves, the more we receive. It's counterintuitive, I know, but that's how life is. The more we try to hold on to something, the less we have control over it. The more control we have is when we just let it go.
That's amazing. Yeah.
Well, look,
we've got a
few minutes here. Before we end the show, I want you to be able to tell us a little bit about your work and how people can get in touch with you if they would like to find out more about you and your work and how you might be able to be of service to them.
Okay, well, I have a website. You can see some of my poetry on it and my contact information. It's called 21stcenturyproverbs.com. My email information is on there and some other things. And what I do is I encourage people, I inspire people, and I write. I write obituaries. I write wedding songs. Anything you need written, I'm the wordologist. And I write poetry, and I do some things that are pretty unique. And anything that you need to do in the literary arena, if you want something creative and something that's going to impact someone, or if you just need someone to come and inspire someone to be all that they can be, you can contact me because it has a great impact on people when somebody's in the wheelchair, encouraging and lifting them up and telling them about the circumstances they've overcome. And I've learned something. Here's a 21st century proverb. It's simply this. Patience gives love the ability to grow without limits. So we got to be patient with people, and what's desired in man is kindness. And people really just want to feel valued. So I just have a way of showing people value and helping them identify things that are a plague to them that's keeping them back and giving them the remedy from the great physician, that type of thing. But in essence, I'm an encourager, and I am a writer that encourages people. I write some obituaries that just make people just relax and know that everything is going to be fine.
Wow.
And wedding songs wow. that are just inspiring.
Mm-hmm. So what was
so
that website again?
It's called 21st21stcenturyproverbs.com.
Perfect, 21stcenturyproverbs.com. Wonderful. I'd like to thank you, William, for joining me today and having the courage to share this story and your healing. It was great to have you on. I mean, many blessings to you.
Thank you so much. It was an honor to be on, Coach Frank, and I'll see you soon, hopefully.
Perfect. I'm Frank Thomas on the all-new Hour of Truth with Coach FT on Creating Calm Network on Blog Talk Radio. Join me next Sunday at 3 p.m. Pacific as I bring new stories, new hope, new truth. You've been listening to Hour of Truth with Coach FT. Until next week, God bless you. Thanks for listening.